Hello.
Yes, Ariana?
Yes.
It's Jim Turr in Santa Fe.
Oh, Jim, how are you? Can I call you from the car in exactly 5 minutes?
Yes, I think
you.
I'll figure out a way to do it with this phone. I have it more rigged up for calling out.
Oh, you can call me. Call me back on this number in 5 minutes.
No problem. I will. Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Hello. Yes, hi, Ariana.
Hi. Hold on, I'll be right with you. Hold on a second.
Oh, take your time.
Hi.
Hi, Ariana.
How are you?
I'm fine. How are you?
Good, thank you.
Now, have I got your pronunciation right? Ariana, right?
Yeah, that's just fine.
Okay, good.
Wonderful. And you have an accent. How bad can you be, right?
I have an accent?
A kind of nice accent. Where were you born?
I was born on Long Island, but I was raised in Michigan and mostly in New Mexico.
Oh, great. There's a nice, like, lil to it.
Oh, good. Well, you should, I don't see Santa Fe and Albuquerque on your book tour. You should try to come out here. You'd have a huge...
Well, maybe for the paperback.
Okay. Well, I'll pass that suggestion along to internal and external that designed very consciously to make you compare yourself to other people attractiveness-wise and aspire to that. It's pretty overwhelming when you think about it. And I wonder, did the fact that you have two daughters, you're speaking to, writing to, perhaps trying to save from this, give you the edge, the power, the motivation to get through this? It's a really inspired project, and it seems so central when you think about it.
Well, actually, it was very much written about my daughters. You know, that is what prompted me to write it. And so very much about everybody's daughters. The idea that our daughters are at the moment trapped in a very, very difficult cultural time with tremendous pressures on them to be seen, to and still be feminine and speak out but not alienate men. You know, there's just a lot that they have to deal with. And I wanted to write a book which was really a roadmap to leading fearless lives, which does not mean lives without fear,
right,
but lives where you're not trapped by your fear.
Mm-hmm. One point really resonated and really felt kind of tragic, and that is the idea that in order to please others, as we imagine anyway, to prevent others from shutting us down, we do it for them. We cut out our self-expressiveness, our uniqueness. But you have some really amazing observations in there about those who really do come across as attractive.
Well, yes, because I think that there's nothing more attractive than confidence and self-confidence. And that's what I feel is the method to communicate to our daughters. And that doesn't mean somebody who hasn't failed, because everybody successful has failed. And failure is really part of a fearless life. And it's just a question of how do we deal with the inner critics, the inner judges, you know, those voices in our heads that I call in the book the obnoxious roommate living in our head. For me, that's the most important thing. How do we, if not evict, at least lower the volume of that voice?
Well, I loved what you said about women, older women in particular, who come across as attractive, but who aren't because of a quality they have, but not because they look like everyone else. I was really fascinated with that. That's so true.
Yes, and even, you know, I write about the French have a word for it, jolie laide, which means somebody who is not conventionally beautiful, but who radiates a confidence and an engagement in life, and all those things are ultimately more attractive than anything.
I wonder how much of your style, as far as that kind of confidence and just going straight forward, you attribute to your debating training there, and how much perhaps instead to your mother, your fearless mother, whom you acknowledge so often in the book.
Oh, a lot. You know, she's very much my fearless role model. She's as I write in the book, a huge part of my life, I think the foundation of a lot of what I have done, because she basically made me believe in myself and by her own unconditional loving of me.
Mm-hmm.
And that meant that I always knew that I could try for my dreams, and if I failed, she wouldn't love me any less. And that's what I think the greatest gift we can give to our daughters,
mm-hmm.
and is to be a kind of charter member of their tribe, if you want. I call this support group that everybody needs to fulfill their dreams their own personal little tribe. And so being able to be there for them the way my mother was for me is, I think, really the greatest gift that we can give them.
Do you feel that some of our, as I do anyway, that some of our political problems and people being so easily manipulated politically is due to so many people coming from a place of not their true center, their true nature?
Well, absolutely. You know, that's why I say in the book that in the end, you cannot be a fearless leader if you don't have a foundation of personal fearlessness. But in the end, it comes back to that core. And that's why it's very instructive that when FDR said we have nothing to fear, the only thing we have to fear is fear itself, he had come from the struggle with polio and
right.
2 years of battling that. And that's where his own foundation of fearlessness came from. And he was able to communicate it to a nation. And for me, that's really what we need now.